The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you? Moed Tov. How was Pesach?
Some of us are old enough to remember the original version, but I like that one.
Yeah, I did as well. I love the original version, but I thought this one was great as well. So, how's lockdown going in Israel?
Wow. Quite a lot to report. We haven't spoken for a few days and quite a lot to report. Let's just start with the facts of the situation. The latest update of coronavirus in Israel is that 109 people have passed away in Israel from the coronavirus. 4 people passed away overnight, and late yesterday, the former Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Eliyahu Bakshi Doron, actually passed away. One of the Gedolei Hador, one of the well-respected leaders of the rabbinic generation, passed away. Many eulogies being written about him. He apparently did suffer from some quite serious pre-existing conditions. He was only 79 years old. Served as the chief rabbi, the Sephardi chief rabbi, from 1993 to 2003, and unfortunately succumbed to the coronavirus late yesterday. A funeral of a man like him would usually attract tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people. Literally, the streets would be absolutely teeming. People not even being able to get anywhere near to the cemetery as a result of the crowds. On this occasion, absolutely not. Only a few handpicked people will be allowed to attend the funeral. And that really is the theme that we've been seeing throughout this period that we've been in lockdown. Yesterday was officially the day of the Birkat HaKohanim, of the priestly blessing that normally takes place on the second day of Chol HaMoed for Pesach and Sukkot at the Kotel. We would normally see tens of thousands of people turn up there, a really packed gathering, a silence as the Kohanim recite the priestly blessing, and of course lots and lots of celebrations. Hallel would normally be said. Yesterday, a few handpicked individuals were invited to come to the Kotel. The priestly blessing was pronounced, as is the tradition, but on this occasion, without the crowds and without the participation of the public, just a few people, each one a very orchestrated, being their social distancing being maintained in a very, very specific sort of way, stands set up to make sure that nobody's near anybody else. So this is really having an effect on absolutely everything that we do. And unfortunately, quite a major outbreak in the city of Jerusalem, and particularly in the Haredi communities and the Haredi neighborhoods of Jerusalem. The government decided to divide the city up into different regions of the city to lock people down effectively, to create more stringent restrictions within the city of Jerusalem that people are not allowed to move around. Very, very strict instructions having been issued for people to stick to the area in which they live, not to move around outside of the area that's been designated as their particular local region, unless they are considered to be an emergency worker, they have permission to leave to go to work, or unless they have other emergency issues to take care of. Once again, in the same way as we saw a lockdown in Bnei Brak where the police and the army took control of the situation, we're seeing a similar situation in Jerusalem. There's been a lot of opposition to locking Jerusalem down, but unfortunately, there's just been a massive, massive outbreak. And whereas we saw a slight kind of leveling out over the weekend of the number of people in hospital and the number of people who've been seriously ill, and indeed even the number of people, the rate of the deaths that we've seen, there was a slight leveling out. Now all of a sudden it's picked up a little bit again, and I think that we're now going into seeing the after effects of the huge outbreak that we saw in Bnei Brak. And I suppose in due course in Jerusalem, this takes time to work its way through the system. It'll take a week or two until we see exactly what's happening there. Lots of different people talking about different things. One of the things that I think is an enduring theme and is probably worth talking about a little now, and maybe we can talk about it again on a different occasion, and I'd like to invite people to participate, is this issue of people feeling discrimination this discriminatory aspect that's risen up within the whole treatment of coronavirus. It kind of reared its head in Israel when people felt that the stringent lockdown that was being placed on Bnei Brak was some sort of discrimination against the ultra-Orthodox community that lived there, that was unfair and this was not reasonable. And now, of course, the mayor of Jerusalem and, in fact, even some of the government ministers, Ari Dery, other people who are members of the ultra-Orthodox community, have raised the issue again about Jerusalem, saying that this is not okay to place such stringent restrictions on certain communities in Jerusalem because it is tantamount to discrimination against those communities. And this is actually a much, much wider issue because we've seen a huge uprise in anti-Semitism around the world due to the fact that coronavirus seems to have affected Jews and Jewish communities more severely than others. If you look what's going on in New York, particularly within the ultra-Orthodox community, and you look at what's going on in the UK, also, again, within the ultra-Orthodox community, there are more victims of coronavirus per population than we see in the general population. I'm making kind of a relatively sweeping statement here without bringing statistics, but this is sort of anecdotal. And as a result of this anecdotal feeling, which I feel, and obviously I'm not the only one because this is a feeling that we see elsewhere, there is this upsurge of anti-Semitism against the Jewish community because people feel that they haven't adhered to the restrictions, that their communities have been kind of above the law to some degree, and therefore there is this feeling of antagonism towards those communities, and a feeling that because those communities have been more than affected, more disproportionately affected than other communities, and more severe action has had to be taken against those communities, that this is amounts to some sort of discrimination. And it's an unfortunate thing because we literally have two parallel examples running in Israel. We've got those people who, at the time of lockdown, more or less adhered to what the government was saying. And we're kind of seeing a leveling out now of the effects of the coronavirus in those communities. And then in parallel to that, we've got those communities who didn't adhere to the restrictions that the government laid down at the time. And now we're seeing a huge upsurge in the number of cases and the number of people being diagnosed. And unfortunately, the people needing intubation and needing hospitalization and needing more severe medical attention, more, you know, more urgent medical attention, and unfortunately, people who are dying as a result of that. So we've really got two parallel tracks that we can see the effects of what might have happened had the rest of Israel not adhered to those restrictions. This is now what we're seeing, unfortunately, within the ultra-Orthodox communities as well.
Although, just to be clear, it's not all ultra-Orthodox communities. It's a segment of the ultra-Orthodox community.
That's true.
I read an amazing blog on Times of Israel by a guy who said, you know, and I'm not sure I agree with everything he said, but he wrote from within the perspective of the ultra-Orthodox community, and he said, you know, most of us are adhering to it, and most of us would like to, and I condemn, obviously, anyone who isn't, but the question is, if we saw people on the beach in Tel Aviv, non-religious Jews on the beach in Tel Aviv, would we say, well, it's all non-religious people? So I get what he's saying. In some ways, I don't agree with it because there is a concept of if you're representing a certain, and I believe that strongly about religious Jews of all levels, if you're wearing a kippah, if you're wearing a head covering, you can't behave in a certain way because it brings disgrace to either Jews or to your sector of Judaism. So I think that that's the counter, but his point was well made, and in that, you know, we speak about it in terms of the ultra-Orthodox, but we never speak about it in terms of the secular Jews.
Well, I think I hear what he's saying, and I do absolutely feel for him and people like him who have adhered to the rules that were laid down and are now being kind of broad brushed, painted with the same brush as those people who didn't. I think the real issue for me, Howard, is the fact that the leadership of the ultra-Orthodox community did not stand up and take control. That's really why I think we're making general sweeping statements about that community, is not because of the individuals who did, who kind of seem to be almost exceptions to the rule. The problem is that the leadership, the big rabbis, didn't react at the time that they should have reacted, and if they had done, most of the flock would have followed suit, but they didn't. So that's really where the criticism is really not at the level of the individual, but rather at the community level, where the leadership didn't take control when they really needed to, and as a result of that, now we're seeing what we're seeing.
The unfortunate problem as well is we're seeing a lot of that in New York, where funerals are being broken up by the police, where members of the ultra-Orthodox, some members of the ultra-Orthodox community are not adhering to the regulations and attending funerals very crowded. It's very worrying.
And what we know is that if the leading rabbis stood up and made pronouncements about what people need to do, as a general rule, they would adhere to it. Because we know that that's how the community works. And I think that the leadership has really failed them in this particular sense, that they've reacted too little and way too late in terms of getting people to understand the seriousness. And this is, this is pikuach nefesh in its absolute form. It couldn't be clearer. It couldn't be clearer that this is pikuach nefesh, and pikuach nefesh is above everything else. And therefore, I don't get why it has been so difficult for the leadership to stand up and say, guys, this is pikuach nefesh. Nothing is more important than saving lives.
Absolutely right. Before I let you go, the mandate handed to Benny Gantz to form a government is due to expire tonight.
Indeed. Benny Gantz was asked to form a government after the last election. We've almost forgotten about that to some degree. But he was asked to form a government, having received more support from members of the Knesset who were elected in the previous election. The president, Ruvi Rivlin, handed the mandate to Benny Gantz. That time period that he was given to form a government expires this evening. We understand that Benny Gantz actually asked the president for an extension to allow him to continue to form a government. We do know that there have been discussions between him and Prime Minister Netanyahu. We thought that they were almost there in terms of reaching an agreement once the Kahol Lavan party split up. There were lots and lots of changes to the political landscape during this last period, which we thought would really facilitate the formation of a government. It seems as if, though, a government is not being formed because of bickering between the two parties about who's going to get which job and which ministers will be appointed to which positions, or which senior politicians will be appointed to which positions. And Benny Gantz was of the view that he could still form a government if he was allowed a slight extension to the time. In the event, as I understand things, the president has said no. He's not going to allow an extension. And so, therefore, we understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu and Benny Gantz will today have some sort of marathon talks in an attempt to form a government. There is a view, there is a feeling of lack of optimism about the prospects of them coming to an agreement. It's not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure who is to blame and who is being a stickler in this particular situation. But it seems as if, though, tomorrow we will still not have a government. And it's unclear what the president will do next, whether he will then return the mandate to the Knesset, or whether he will ask the Prime Minister if he can form a government on his terms. I'm not really sure, but I guess tomorrow we will talk a little bit more about it.
Unbelievable. And I can't imagine Israelis going back to another election, certainly not at the moment. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, and speak to you then.